Hello and welcome to all of you. Welcome to the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on this Monday, Labor Day Monday here in the city, as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City, a day that we celebrate the working people of this country, men, women, children, anyone that labors. I hope on this Labor Day Monday your labors are few. There's lots going on. There was a parade this morning. I think there's another parade somewhere this afternoon. There are festivals all over town, as far east as Santa Caligon and Independence, as far west as the Renaissance Festival out west there. Do something. Enjoy yourself. Celebrate with your family and your friends. Those are the most important things that you can do. Glad to have you with us on the Arts Magazine Show. We're going to clue you in to a couple of events going on this week, and I hope you enjoy it. The Kansas City Rep will open its season with the new musical, and it's a world premiere musical, by the way, The Last Days of Summer. With us to tell us all about it, I always believe in going to the source. So the author of the book, which became the play, which became a musical version of the play, is with us. Steve Kluger is his name. Listen to this biography. Author, playwright, journalist, librettist, whose writing is known for its baseball, gay, and historical, particularly World War II themes, has written articles on civil rights, gay rights, baseball community causes, Japanese-American internment redress, and the campaign to save Fenway Park. Last Days of Summer is the basis for this 2018 musical of the same title. He has won many awards. I noticed one of the articles was about the Black Sox scandal. What don't you know about, Steve?
A lot. But in certain areas, yeah, I kind of...
This is a strange blending, though, of things. You must admit that.
I know. It is. It is. It's sort of almost semi-psychotic, but not really. It just sort of... chromosomes got all mixed up. So things that shouldn't go...
Well, I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're talking to us here today. It's an interesting play. It's a musical, of course, blended from your book, and you added music to it, and you of course, wrote the musical score on your own. You had an interesting story to tell me about that before we started.
Right. Actually, the music was written by Jason Howland, Grammy Award winner, composer, Broadway composer, and... when I was working on... Okay. The score was written by Broadway composer Jason Howland, Grammy Award winner, and he wrote the Broadway musical Little Women. And before I met him, I adapted the script, the libretto, from the novel, and because I hadn't been able to find a composer yet who specialized in 40s-era music, all I did when I found the musical moments in the show was pick some of the more unknown, more obscure big band swing songs that I had in my collection and just rewrote the lyrics so that they fit the show. And they were intended to be dummy lyrics. I'd never written lyrics before. Of course, I grew up on musicals, so I grew up on the best. It never occurred to me during the process that I'd absorbed everybody. I'd absorbed the styles. I'd absorbed everybody's different insights on how to write lyrics. We're talking Alan Lerner, we're talking Irving Berlin, we're talking Cole Porter. These are my influences. So when Jason came on board to write the score, it turned out he wanted to adapt my lyrics. And I'm thinking, I'm not a lyricist. And apparently I was. I just didn't know it. So I'd intended just to write the libretto itself, but now I'm a librettist lyricist. And I'm not going to complain. It worked out very well. But between Jason's music and what he brought out in me, it's just such a great score. It's become one of my favorite Broadway scores, and that's not just because I'm involved. Seriously, I mean, I've got Gypsy is my favorite, Flower Drum Song is my second favorite, and I have to say this is my third. So, for what it's worth.
Oh, sure, and quite a list of accomplishments there as well for you. All that, a lot of things go into this. I mean, you're the baseball interest, the interest in I guess bullying is a side issue as well.
Like I went through a lot of that when I was a kid. That's why that features as a theme in the novel, also in the musical.
So the team featured in this, and it's set in the 1940s.
1941.
Is the New York Giants.
Yes.
Not one of your particular fan favorite teams.
No, I mean, when if I had to say it going back through time, the Brooklyn Dodgers would definitely be it. But there was something about the Giants that worked for me in this story. It's about a disenfranchised kid whose father is a band in the family who lives in Brooklyn. And I thought, well, if you're going to have a rebellious kid living in Brooklyn, who else is he going to root for but the Giants? You know, I mean, he might as well complete his total ostracization and root for the team that everybody hates where he lives. So that's how they came into being. And I've really gotten to love that team. I really have. The more I read about it, the more I learned about it. Writing about it was even better.
Well, this was before the infamous shot heard round the world.
Oh, yeah. This was 10 years before that, you know.
I guess it's divided the New York community, and I guess where you lived. Oh, you're either a Brooklyn fan, a Giants fan, or a Yankees fan.
It was huge. If you lived in Queens, you were a Dodgers fan. And if you lived in Brooklyn, obviously, you were a Dodgers fan. If you lived anywhere else, or if you lived in Manhattan or the Bronx, you were a Yankees fan. If you were in Staten Island, nobody really cared who you were rooting for. But, I mean, that's just because that's the way New York was then.
Now, is it based on any experiences you had as a young man?
Actually, the novel was intended as a biographical piece. My imagining what my father's life could have turned out to be like if he'd had somebody to champion him when he was a kid. Because his father, also a bad in the family, left my father alone right around the time he was 13 years old, which is the same age as this kid. And he led a very unhappy life because he never stopped searching for my grandfather's approbation and approval. And it pretty well destroyed his life, and he was very unhappy when he died. He had a very unhappy life. And it was like an olive branch to him, just saying, it wasn't your fault. This is what could have happened if you had had somebody who'd been in your corner when you were growing up, particularly at that critical age. And the good thing is I had enough of the first part of the book written that I was able to send it to him to read it about a year before he died. He loved it. He absolutely loved it. And I said, Dad, this is you when you were a kid. I mean, I'm sort of projecting, but he said, no, it isn't. It's you when you were a kid. And he had to remind me of a couple of scrapes that I got into that I got myself out of, and I went, what do you know? Maybe. So I sort of created an amalgam of being my father. And I put the book away for a while, and then he died. And it was a tough year getting over that. And finally, at the end of the year, I said, you know what? I've got to go back and finish this book just so I can dedicate it to him and have it on my shelf. And I don't care if anything happens with it after that. And that kind of doomed it to succeed, because once you say, not interested, I only want it for me, that has to. If you push it just because you want it to go, it is going to be very tough to make that happen. The minute you say, nah, that's not what I want, it sort of happens on its own. And that's how it's developed since.
Writing the songs, to me, would be the hardest part.
The easiest. Because I didn't think I could do it, and I thought I was just throwing things out there just to get them on paper so somebody professional could go do it. And all of a sudden, you know, it just, I had no problems with that at all. The script part, I've written a couple of plays, and they've been produced, so I had. But script work is hard work, particularly when you're going between the lines and you have to get tiny little moments thought out well, and they play well, and the nuances have to be there. Lyrics, that's rhyming, it's clever rhyming, it's, you know, if you've listened to Stephen Sondheim, if you've listened to the rest, I thought, I'm just imitating. I wasn't. It turned out people were saying, wow, these are very original, they're okay, you know, I'm not going to argue, but it's just, it wasn't a sweat. It was pure fun. Writing lyrics is pure fun.
Tell me about the young man.
The little brother.
The little, yeah.
Okay. That's Avi Vinoker now, who is, has been, he was my little brother through the Big Brother program when he was 11. He's 34 now, just. He's got his own band. He's a pretty well-known contemporary musician, pop rock musician. And when I first met him, he was a big baseball fan. And Ken Griffey Jr. was his idol. And I used to take him to baseball card shows. And I'd also filled him in on a lot of the background of the sport because he didn't know any of it. And one of the things I made him listen to was Russ Hodges on the radio announcing the shot heard around the world when Bobby Thompson smacked it over the wall and snatched this major victory out of certain defeat in 1951. With Hodges going, and Branca swings. And it's a hard hit ball to deep left. And the Giants win the pennant. The Giants win the pennant. The Giants win the pennant. The oh, and they're going crazy here at the Polo Grounds. The Giants win the pennant. The Giants. And Avi was like really fascinated by that. And he could imitate it very well. And then he calls me one day and he said, listen, I want to go to this baseball card show on Saturday. He said, you know, Bobby Thompson's going to be there. I'm like, wow. And he said, yeah, so can we go? I said, sure, we can go. And I'd love to. Do we get to meet him? He said, yeah, he's signing baseballs. I said, okay, fine. So we go down there. It was later in the afternoon, and the big crowds had already come and gone. And there's Bobby Thompson sitting at the table by himself. And I stop short, and I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no, that's really Bobby Thompson. That's the real Bobby Thompson. His hair is white, but if you color it black in your head, that's Bobby Thompson. And I started to freak out. The kid was fine. And we get up there, and Avi just puts out a baseball from the sign. And I'm looking at him, and I'm shaking like a leaf. In the meantime, I had a baseball card of his from 1949, 2 years before he hit that home run. And I handed it to him, and I said, could you sign this for me? And he said, well, technically I'm not allowed to sign anything but baseballs, but make sure nobody's looking, and sure. So he signs the card, and before he does, he says to me, are you sure you want me to do this? It'll reduce the value of the card if my signature is on it. And I looked at him and said, do you really think I ever plan to sell it? So he laughed, and he signed it. And then he looks at Avi and says, do we have a ball player here? Well, yes, Avi was a little leaguer. He was playing left field. So he says to Avi, let me see your batting stance. So, of course, the kid, still being very cool, is like, oh, just some old guy's asking me. I used to be a ball player. So Thompson is looking at his batting stance, and he said, okay, you're making the same mistake everybody does. He said, everybody thinks it's all in the wrist and the arms. It's not. It's in your feet. Let me tell you what you're doing wrong. And I'm sitting here watching Bobby Thompson coach the kid who's in my care on how to bat, and I'm thinking it could all end now and it would be fine because it just doesn't get any better than this. It was surreal. It was just that great. It was terrific. And it's no coincidence, I think, that the main character in the musical and in the novel is a third baseman for the New York Giants, and that's the position Bobby played.
Last Days of Summer runs September 7th through September 30th at the Kansas City Repertory Theater on campus at the Spencer Theater. The website to go to for more information and to make arrangements as well is kcrep.org, and the number to call the central ticket office is 816-235-2700. We're speaking with Steve Kluger, who wrote the book and lyrics and lots of other things, part of the Saving Fenway Park movement. Why would they want to tear down such an iconic place?
They said they didn't want to tear it down. What they planned to do, they said, was take over the next block and, quote-unquote, expand it, because the next block had a brick building that was the same type of facade. And this is all just whitewashed. They wanted to tear it down. They wanted to build a much bigger park to accommodate more people. They call it an expansion, and everybody in Boston knew, no, this is not an expansion. And even if it were an expansion, this is sacrilege. You know, this is desecration. So there was this big movement, don't let this happen, with petitions. I was living in L.A. at the time. I flew to Boston. I got involved in meetings. I got involved in petition signing. And the wonderful thing about Boston is when the population gets serious about something, they are serious about something. And when it comes to the Red Sox, do not mess around with them. Do not mess around. And the population prevented that from happening. And there was finally, management said, all right, you know what? Fine, we can't do it without support. But you do have to understand, because we only seat under 40,000 people, which is only two-thirds of what the major stadiums seat, you're going to have to accept significantly higher ticket prices in order for us to be able to compete with the income the other teams are making. And the people of Boston said, fine, don't even think about touching the park. And that was it. Tickets are very expensive, but people bite the bullet because they'd rather do that than go to a new ballpark. They're never going to allow that to happen.
Yeah, this is it's a new musical. It's the world premiere of it. If this works out, are you going to do more musicals?
I don't know yet. This has been a terrifying experience because I've wanted to do a musical my whole life. I just didn't think I was equipped to. So every step of the way has been terrifying, and I thought, well, that's because it's the first time. You know, maybe I'll do another one. If it's just as terrifying, then I won't do any more. But if it turns out it's just beginner's nerves, sure, because creatively it's been a sheer joy. Jeff Calhoun is the director. He directed Newsies on Broadway. Jason, as I said, won a Grammy, composed Little Women on Broadway. These are two of the most gifted people I've ever worked with in my life, and it's been a sheer joy. So I think for the collaboration purposes, I would love to.
Were you in part of the casting process?
I sat in on auditions, but that's really casting. When it comes to a musical, it really comes down to the director and the composer. The composer has to make sure that the individual has the vocal range, and the director has to make sure that he or she has the right elements to play the part. I was there as devil's advocate, either to agree with or point out why I disagreed with. But in this particular case with who we cast, there was no argument about anybody. We have just got a brilliant cast, so I'm thrilled about it.
It'll run, of course, September 7th through September 30th at the Kansas City Repertory Theater. What are your plans after this wraps up? You must have assignments you're all ready to do.
No, I'm leaving the door open here because if this does well here, we're going to go to New York. And I just don't want to get anything involved between now and then. I'll give it a couple month leeway, and if it turns out it's going to take a little time to get there, great. Then I'll go figure out, you know, I've a lot of other things I do. Op-ed writing and magazine contributions that I'll do in the meantime, but I just don't want to make any commitments right now while this is happening.
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, I noticed you wrote an article about the Black Sox scandal. Lots of things involved in baseball, but that's one of the black marks on on baseball.
Yes, although I took this up in another novel, but I still think Buck Weaver was so unfairly tarred with that brush that he never should have. It should have been the Chicago 8, not 9. Should have been 8. No, I'm sorry, Chicago 7, not 8. It should have been 7 men out, not 8 men out. Buck Weaver did everything right. The only thing he didn't do was rat on his teammates. And you cannot get banned from baseball for that. And, you know, so I already have another civil rights cause there. Clear Buck Weaver, but that's all of the ballgame. I'll get to it when I can.
Well, you have so many of these. How many novels altogether?
Four novels.
Four?
Yeah, four novels, four plays, one musical, two nonfiction. And, so it's pretty well covered.
And you've won several awards as well. It's kind of hard to pigeonhole you.
No, I like it that way.
No, I like it that way.
It's sort of like at the end of Star Wars, when the first Star Wars, when Luke is trying to hit that target, and he turns on his sights and to sight the target, and it locks him into Darth Vader's scope. And Vader says, "I have you now." And Luke hears Obi-Wan say, "Trust the Force, Luke." And he switches off the scope and relies on instinct, falls out of Vader's scope, and he still manages to make the shot on his own. And that's what I always tell kids. You don't get pigeonholed. Do not follow any preconceived set of rules, because that's exactly what everybody else is doing. You've got to sort of reach out and make your own, you know, make your own opportunities.
I mean, both of your favorite teams were involved in great curses. The Red Sox had the Bambino curse,
right,
which they broke,
right,
and the Cubs had a goat curse,
well,
which
goat
they
curse,
broke.
It's like, you know, I draw the line at goats. I just can't do it. I mean, I can't take it seriously.
Now, if and you mentioned this earlier, if the Cubs and the Red Sox were to meet in the World Series,
well, now it wouldn't matter because they both won. However, prior to 2004, if they had met in the World Series, the only possible outcome would have been it would have gone to Game 7, tied three games apiece, and then the world would have come to an end, because it simply could not have proceeded with one of them winning. It just couldn't.
Well, it has worked for you to ingrain your love of baseball with the causes that you follow as well. You've made it work. That's very clever.
But in this particular case, the Japanese-American internment, which I have been working on since 1983, internment redress, that fit into this story very naturally because of the time period that the story is set in, 1941-42, and it was a great opportunity to spotlight that. And one of the things that I'm most grateful for is that the novel made the jump into high school and college curricula. Now it's in middle school as well. And this is where so many kids have first heard about the internment, which thrills me to no end. because it's been kept out of history books. We don't want to admit we did that.
You know? Well, it's an embarrassment.
It is.
Let's face it. It's very un-Roosevelt-like, but it happened.
Very. There's a line in the play that says, how could Roosevelt do such a thing? And it's true. It's a blot the same way slavery was a blot there. We made mistakes along the way. The good thing about all of them so far is that we ultimately owned up to them. And, you know, made good on them and apologized and did whatever we could to make it better.
There's a lot of things to read about Steve, but Steve has a website, stevekluger.com.
Right.
You can go there and read all about his articles, which are numerous, his novels. I guess we're going to start the musical section.
Yes,
there'll probably be several musicals now. As well as doing that. Any ideas? I know authors don't like to give away what they're thinking, all that. But any ideas of what you'd like to do in the future?
Well, yeah, you know what? Now that this is working, the musical seems to be doing well. If it does do well, I have two more novels that beg to be musicalized. And I thought, well, once I got the source material, I'm fine. At least that takes care of 80% of the job. I don't have to worry about making up the characters of the story. It's already there. So, I kind of like to take a whack at that.
In the way that you write, it automatically is attractive because of the different subjects matter you bring into it. Would this have worked as well if baseball were not involved? Probably not.
No, not in this case, no. Everything has a founding, an underlying theme to it, and if you pull the theme out, it all falls apart. So in this case, you don't have to know about baseball. I mean, it's just one of the characters happens to be a baseball player. The kid needs a hero. The hero is a big baseball star. Baseball is strictly a background. It helps if you know it. You'll spot certain little details that somebody else wouldn't. But baseball's got to be there underlying it, but it's not about the game.
Mm-hmm.
If you took that out of there and did not make him a baseball player, this whole thing would fall apart.
Don't get me wrong. I enjoy seeing all the games on television now. I really do. But I can remember the days when most of them were on the radio only.
Right, me too.
And you had to paint your own picture of what was happening.
Particularly at night when you're lying in bed with transistor radio thinking, okay, I see it. And you can imagine. And sometimes kids will say to me, why did this have to be set in 1941? And honestly, because in the story, you get a rookie third baseman who's pretty much a star responding to a 12-year-old boy and getting involved with him as his mentor. Okay, this would not happen now. It wouldn't in a million years happen now. It could have happened then. These days, everybody's so tied up in product endorsements and what's in it for me and how much money can I make. Nobody would voluntarily do something like that just because they saw that a kid was hurting. It just wouldn't happen.
The demands on their time are so hard.
Yeah. It's true, but you have to ask the question, where have all the heroes gone? You know, I mean, it's just that heroes are one thing and stars are another, and now they're pretty much stars more than heroes.
The players are just as famous today, but they're not as iconic as they were.
They're not as iconic, and they're not as real either. They're not people. They are more images than anything else, which is one of the things that when I came back to Kansas City, I just remember the last time I was here when I saw a Royals game, and George Brett was at third, and there was Clint Hurdle, and there was Darryl Ford behind the plate, and there was Larry Gero in the mound, and I'm like, oh man, this is baseball. And I went the other night, it was a great game, but you know, I miss what I saw in 1983. I just miss it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the guys who made that team for me. So.
Yeah. Well, I asked you before, you know, any particular causes that you want to cover next?
You know, at this point, I'll have to uncover them, because I think everything that comes my way, I had no idea that I was going to get involved with the Japanese-American internment movement, because I didn't know about it. And the minute I read about it, in a book, just in passing, in a history book, I went, wait, what? We did what?
Mm-hmm.
Because that was hidden from me in high school. And I did all the research I could. There was not very much back then. And I hit the ceiling. I went, oh, no, this is not right. This cannot be allowed to stand.
Yeah.
That was right at the beginning of the redress movement. And, it was a very vital cause to get involved with, and it was so rewarding. Although I am still hawking the Department of the Interior to restore the baseball diamond at Manzanar, because they've turned it into a memorial. They've rebuilt a couple of the barracks. That diamond was the heartbeat of that camp and every one of the other nine camps. Baseball is what saved them. And there's a book called Baseball Saved Us. And it's about, I think it's a children's book, but it's about how baseball was what got them through those 2.5 horrible years. And I want that diamond restored, and I will see it restored one way or another. If I have to sneak in the middle of the night to do it, I'll do it. Trespassing, fine, I'll go to jail. But that diamond's going to be back.
Steve's new musical, Last Days of Summer, premieres on September the 7th and will run through September 30th at the Kansas City Repertory Theater on campus at the Spencer Theater. You can go online to make arrangements or for facts, ask questions, all of that. KCREP.org and the number of the Central Ticket Office, if you like to do things that way, 816-235-2700. Thanks so much for coming here today and enlightening me on some things I didn't know. And it's an interesting mix, the way you integrate sports, particularly baseball, with your social issues. Probably get more attention from people that way.
Absolutely. It draws a lot more people in.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Russ Simmons with Freeze Frame, KKFI's weekly look at the newest cinematic fare at your local theaters. Audiences always say they want something different from Hollywood. Well, Searching, a tense thriller with a unique gimmick, fills the bill. All of the action of Searching takes place on a computer screen. John Cho and Deborah Messing star in this story of a father who uses the internet to frantically search for his missing daughter. Searching's story is evolving, so the gimmick works. Ken is an action drama mashup of sci-fi, family dysfunction, and road movie themes. Newcomer Miles Truitt is an appealing teen hero who's pursued by numerous folks after finding an alien ray gun. Ken almost works, but the filmmakers throw in so many ideas against the wall that too few of them stick. The Bookshop, based on Penelope Fitzgerald's novel, tells the low-key story of a widow, played by Emily Mortimer, who opens a bookshop in a small English village in the 1950s. She's opposed by the local village matriarch, played by Patricia Clarkson, who wants the site for an art center. Although it generates some gentle charm, the film's deliberate pace works against it. Donald Gleason and Ruth Wilson star in The Little Stranger, a meandering and slow-moving ghost story filled with characters that are very hard to like. And the final reveal is a real eye-roller. Lovers of the book may be able to fill in the movie's blanks. Operation Finale is a workmanlike historical drama starring Oscar Isaac and Ben Kingsley about the Israeli intelligence agency's efforts to capture the infamous Nazi Adolf Eichmann, who's hiding out in Argentina. The acting is solid and the story is important, but the drama never quite is as riveting as it should have been. Also opening this week, Ethan Hawke and Rose Byrne star in the comedy Juliet Naked, and Skate Kitchen is a drama about teen skateboarders. Well, that's it for this edition of Freeze Frame. Until next time, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4 and KKFI-FM. Freeze Frame!
Lead Bank presents the 14th annual KKFI Crossroads Music Fest on Saturday, September the 8th. This year, the Midwest Music Foundation, along with the Rock Docs, a collaboration of University of Kansas and the Community Health Council of Wyandotte County, present a free musicians' healthcare clinic. The clinic features screenings, hearing protection, wellness program, and free mammograms available with advanced scheduling. Addiction and recovery specialists will also be on hand. Stop by and take a minute for yourself. The free Musicians Healthcare Clinic will be at the Exchange at Lead Bank, 1801 Main, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday, September 8th. All info and scheduling can be found at cmfkc.com.
And welcome back to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI, 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Have a happy Labor Day, and may all of your labors be few on this day. As I said earlier, lots of events going on, festivals, a parade or two. I think there's another parade scheduled this afternoon. Lots of things going on. Go out and enjoy something. Take your family. Take your friends. These are the most important people in the world to you, of course. So do that and enjoy yourself on this holiday. Welcome back. We're going to talk about another iconic event here in Kansas City. It's the 20th annual Dance in the Park. It takes place this Saturday, September the 8th, in Roanoke Park. And with us to tell us all about it, two of the ladies most involved in putting it all together, Ann Shaughnessy, is here. She is the production director and the stage manager of Dance in the Park. So she helps put it all together, pick dancers. We'll let her explain all that. And Andra Skowronek is with us as well. She is one of the artistic co-directors and have been for quite some time now, Andrea.
Mm-hmm. Since 1995.
Wow. So a lot of your life has been spent with City in Motion, yeah. Where you also teach classes.
Yes, yes. I teach modern for adults and children, but I also help direct the Children's Dance Theater and Scholarship Program, and so I wear a lot of hats at City in Motion.
Oh, sure. Now, you have several big events during the year. I know one is towards the first of the year.
Yes. Well, Dance in the Park is our very first event of our season, which starts in September. And then we have a Modern Night at the Folly. That'll be February 2nd, 2019. And then our professional company concert is at the end of April.
This is an outside event. And we know it's been a hot and humid summer, but somehow on the night of Dance in the Park, it always takes a cooler turn for us. So it's all very comfortable out there in Roanoke Park.
Yeah, it's a beautiful time of year in Kansas City. And people can bring their blankets and a picnic. Maybe layers. You know, sometimes it might be a little windy. Sometimes it gets a little cooler after dark. But we'll just keep an eye on the weather, and we really keep going. Unless it's a deluge. If it's pouring down rain, then we have to stop. But there's been years where we've just waited and kind of mopped up the stage, toweled it dry, and then just kept going. There's only been one year that we really had to cancel the event due to rain. And then we have a rain date. We just do it the next day.
Yeah.
Same time.
Well, I don't think it's going to rain. It's going to be very comfortable.
Rain. It'll be beautiful.
No humidity.
And it's condensation on the stage.
No condensation.
That's right. Yeah, that's a big problem. You have the marly surface, of course, but when it gets wet, there still could be some slips.
Yes, we do have a tarp now, so we can put the tarp down, which should help just preserve, like, in between if it rains. And then we always have towels and fans, and we have plenty of, you know, stage help. The stage manager is Anne, but she has an assistant, and then other folks to help, you know, towel dry the stage. We just keep going.
Well, it's in Roanoke Park, so it's between 39th and Carnes Boulevard. The stage is more down towards Carnes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this will be the third year at this newish location. It's really a little bit more convenient because it's at the cross section of Carnes and Roanoke Boulevard. So a little easier access. There's still plenty of parking at the community center or on the grass, and we have parking monitors to help. Many people just walk down from their homes, you know, in the community. Yeah, and it's kind of a natural amphitheater where the stage is set up now, so people sit on the grass or in chairs, but they can go up the hill. So there's a perfect seat. You can see the stage from every spot.
Sure. It's a nice location. It really is. It's going to be, there's going to be, not necessarily in the order probably, but modern dance, hip-hop, ballroom. Now, that should be exciting to watch. Mm-hmm. Some ballroom dancing, ballet, West African, Irish, and of course, much more. I'm going to turn to...
Yeah, we have a couple more genres, a couple surprises.
I'm going to turn back to Anne here for a while. She's the production director, so you essentially get to pick who you want?
Yeah, I try to feature a variety of styles each year, and I try to feature different groups every year so that each show is a little different from year to year, and of course invite back groups that have performed with us in the past.
Some of them have been very popular. Yeah, when you hear the audience ooh and ah out there, you know you're connecting.
Yeah, so yeah, this year it's our 20th year, and we're going to make it a little special by having a pre-show at 6 o'clock. So we're going to start out with Kim Shope teaching a mini creative movement class. So any kiddos can come up on stage. And Kim, she was a former dancer of Kansas City Ballet, and then she started her school, Midtown School of Dance. And that was kind of the inspiration for Dance in the Park. Judy Widener had the idea and asked if Kim would join her, you know, would have her students perform. So it's kind of special this year. Kim's dancers, well, she merged her school with Kansas City Young Audiences Community School of the Arts. So her dancers from there are going to perform after this class that she teaches. So that's going to be really special for her and for us and for the kids, too. Actually, that's student choreography, so they get to present their work.
So 20 years ago it started, probably in the other part of Roanoke Park. You're down more towards the north now.
Yeah, we were on the other side, and it was mostly kind of flat.
I'll bet.
So there was a lot of room, but it didn't have the natural grading.
Well, it's nice that after 20 years, the same group, not the same kids, of course. Well, it could be. You could get some of those old, you could get them up there. I'm sure some of them still have the skills, but you'll have that as part of the pre-show. Any other adult dance class?
Yeah, after that, we're going to feature a Chailey dance type class, and we highly encourage adults to get up there on stage. Sometimes the stage gets overrun by the littles, but so that's why we're kind of doing two different classes, one for the kids and one for, anybody, but hopefully more adults. And so Chailey dance is like partner dancing. It's kind of similar to square dancing, but Irish style. Oh. So it should be really fun. And then we're going to have a surprise performance after that, a little act, which I'll just keep as a surprise.
Okay, we'll keep it a surprise.
And then the show will start at 7 p.m.
At 7 p.m., Shar, you have, I'm sure, a full schedule, at least 10 groups performing or individuals.
Yeah, this year we have 11. I kind of like to do that on the anniversary.
Well, sure.
One more.
The more, the merrier.
Yeah, but usually we do 10. And actually, as we kind of just want to make this a really festive event, we're going to have some giant bubble makers and balloon artists, and the City in Motion will have a booth there, and you can make donations for snacks. And so if you don't bring a full picnic, you can supplement it.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Well, yeah. Do you have an order picked at this time that you want to disclose to me?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, well, who
so
kicks
we'll
it all off at 7?
City in Motion Youth Dance Theater, presenting a modern piece choreographed by Kyle Mullins. And I think, Andrea, did you want to?
Yeah, the piece is called Travelers, and it features our apprentice company. So they're 13 to 18 years of age. They all study at the City in Motion School of Dance, but taking ballet and modern. Some of them take jazz classes. Improvisation is also part of their process. So some of them have worked together for many, many years. And Kyle choreographed a piece called Travelers last year, and they performed it at their own professionally produced concert in June at St. Teresa's Academy. And we also featured them with the professional company on a Sunday as part of our Sunday matinee this year. So that was really fun. So it's a piece that's that they know, that's well rehearsed, but of course it's always different out in the park. It's always, just a little more special with that open air and the sky and the trees all around. So
and all the people as they go up the hill and further on in some cases.
So. Yeah, it's a great experience for them.
It really is, yeah. And, of course, I don't imagine there's anyone other than you, perhaps, connected all 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of kids, including my daughter, start dancing really young and then go through the program and graduate. And some become professional dancers and some don't, but they always have that appreciation of the art form.
Oh, sure. Well, that's a great way to kick it off, and that'll be the opening act. It'll start around 7 o'clock or a few minutes after 7 o'clock, and then we'll move on to what?
Then we're going to have American Youth Ballet back again. It was several years ago that they performed, maybe, I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago,
actually. Yeah, because it was back at the other
location. When I first started doing this. So they're a pre-professional company of American Dance Center. They're comprised of students from age 10 to 19.
Wow.
So, yeah, some really young dancers, but they're very professional. So it's directed by Jennifer Tierney and Christopher Estes Brown, who has choreographed the piece that they're going to be presenting, which has been described as an up-tempo, humorous, contemporary ballet theater piece. So that should be fun. And they're from American Dance Center, which has been around for a while.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah.
And then after that, we're going to feature Seamless Dance Theater, who has performed at Dance in the Park multiple times, a piece by Aaron Lustig, the director. They're doing a song. It's a cover of the Hallelujah song. It's going to be really pretty. And they're always amazing choreography and dancers. So,
which is the most difficult, in both of your opinions, to actually be a dancer in the show or to choreograph the show?
It's really a different process. Uh-huh.
Actually, it's hardest to choreograph and dance
at the same time.
Some people do, yeah.
In the show, but
yeah,
the dancing. I mean, you have to be in your body, you know, performing very physical pieces usually, and have a lot of focus. The choreography is more like mapping. I think of it more of as a left brain sort of a thing, because you're mapping out patterns and listening to music. And I think it's very different.
Yeah, it sounds like it would be. It sounds like it would be just almost impossible, where all of these people move at this time and all of that.
It takes practice. It's a skill.
Certainly does.
A craft.
Well, that's why they have rehearsal, folks. Yeah. And then who's up third on the bill?
So then after Seamless, we're going to have the Driscoll School of Irish Dancers, which was founded 8 years ago by Bridget Driscoll. She's the one that's going to teach the Chailey class earlier. And they perform at community events as well as they also do competitions. They have all ages of students. I think even adults can take there. It's not just for kids, so... but they're going to do some hard shoe dances, which will be really exciting because we haven't had a lot of that. But the floor that we have, it's going to be fine for a hard shoe. So there's going to be lots of energy. They're going to do about four different little pieces.
Does the floor have to be, well, you have a Marley floor. Mm-hmm. I assume you still do. So that's ideal for that kind of dancing?
Yeah, well, it's ideal for modern and ballet and all kinds of dancing. But the hard shoe, I think, I don't know, in the years past, we just maybe have been a little concerned that it might scuff up the floor. Mm-hmm. But the floor that we have right now, there's no concerns about it.
It's tough.
Really tough.
Yeah.
So I'm really excited about that.
Oh, good.
So then we will have... a special guest artist, Jameson Peligro, who is going to be performing on Sear Wheel. Sear Wheel.
What will that be like?
Is like a really big metal hoop or wheel that you can dance inside of and spin around and all around and cartwheel, and it's really fun. I'm actually learning it. So.
Oh, well.
But he's amazing. He's
in years to come, will we see you doing that?
Maybe one day.
Yeah, what you were saying.
So, yeah, he's a really great performer. Lots of stage presence as well. He's actually has a few more tricks up his sleeve that he's going to show. It's not just going to be Sear Wheel. So.
Yeah. So lots of surprises, lots of things going on. You're filling this night up with surprises. That's a good hook to get people in.
Yeah, so it'll be great. And then the last piece we have, the first act, is a Bollywood fusion group called KU Jiva. They're KU students. Jiva, I'm guessing, is inspired by the Hindi word Jiva, I think it's pronounced Jiva, I'm not sure, but which means life of the soul. So they are a group that kind of, they Bollywood fusion. So they're going to have hip-hop and modern influences, as well as more traditional Indian styles, such as Bhangra or Bharatanatyam. Not sure how to say that, but... yeah, they're very dynamic, energetic. It's going to be really great. I was really blown away when I saw their video.
Well, that's
like, yes,
that's how they got picked, because they blew you away.
Yeah. So I'm really, really happy that they're going
to
be able to perform.
To help the folks out. Bollywood means India.
And well, it's like a, yeah, it's a, well, Bollywood itself is kind of a, I don't know, more modern style of Indian. You see it in a lot of the Bollywood movies. So it's more, it's a more modern style.
And then we'll have intermission. You'll be able to visit, sign up for classes. You'll be able to make donations, get refreshments.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there'll be a concession table where people can, provide a donation for cookies or brownies, or we'll have some savory treats as well, and drinks. And then we pass the baskets at that time, so our apprentice company members, some of our board members, will be going through the audience with baskets, because we produce the show free of charge for the audience, but it does cost money to rent the stage and pay the dance companies and pay our professionals, our production staff. So we do ask for donations during intermission.
Sure. And then the second act gets underway. So you have six more to go in the second act?
I think five.
It's five? Okay.
They're kind of equal, though, that both acts are about the same time. So the second act starts with Haley Costas and artists. This is a modern solo with the live cellist. So choreographed by Haley Costas. And the cellist is Connor Giles. So it's a collaborative work that they're going to show called In the Red. And they actually debuted it at the Fringe Festival just recently. But it's going to be really beautiful. And she's blindfolded.
Ah.
But she's a very fluid dancer and so mover. So yeah, it's going to be really nice.
Sounds great. A little bit of mystery to that. Anyone dancing blindfold, and it's be exciting.
Which is kind of hard. It's a little more difficult.
I would
not
think so. Yeah,
but you wouldn't be able to tell that she's a great mover. And then after that, we'll have Redux Society, which is a social dancing kind of group that, well, they kind of do more than that. They their mission is to take elements from the past and represent them in the future. So, for example, they say, we want to resurrect arts, fashion, and dances from eras long forgotten and bring them back into the present with a modern twist. So they're more than just dancing, but they're going to be doing foxtrot, Lindy, Charleston, and then this Brazilian dance.
Wow, fun.
Called Zouk, Zouk, I don't know. Mm. But it's kind of like tango, but more fluid, and I'm kind of elements of samba.
Yeah, I was thinking like they'll probably move fast. Fun. That would be my thinking.
Well, it's very smooth, actually, this particular. Mm. So, I'm really excited to see that. So, and they're fairly new, actually. So, the Redux Society, and they just got a new space. I think it's downtown or somewhere in Midtown, so Redux Society. And then after that, we'll have the City in Motion professional company.
Yeah, the City in Motion professional company is going to do a piece by Haley Wilcox. She danced with us for three seasons, and she's getting her master's degree now in Tempe, Arizona. And she asked City in Motion if she could set this piece on us, and we performed it last season. It has six dancers, and it's called A Movement Meditation on Peaceful Protest.
Oh, uh-huh.
And she got the idea at the Women's March in Washington, D.C. She attended that. She took notes on these different gestures that she saw people doing. But it's a very abstract piece, so it uses lots of group movements. These gestures are kind of woven in. The music's kind of dreamy and beautiful. So it's kind of an evocative piece, definitely a modern dance piece. There's floor work, there's lifts, and we just thought it would be a great choice. It's 5 minutes long, so it's kind of to the point, and we're excited to perform it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What's next?
Next, we're going to have a longtime performer with Dance in the Park, Bobby Ray, his group Bobby Ray Entertainment. which he's created using dancers from multiple genres. I know he's always been interested in using all kinds of dance, not just hip-hop. But they're going to do an excerpt from their full production called The Entertainer, which debuts at Open Spaces Festival. They're going to show it September 15th in Swope Park. And, you know, Open Spaces is a festival going on for about 2 months, and actually Dance in the Park is one of the expanded field events. So they've included us on their schedule, and
And how many are left? Two or one?
We have one more left.
Okay.
Are we good?
One more left. Okay. Yeah. See, I talk too much, and time gets away from us. So,
so they're going to do a really cool dance called The Entertainer, and then after that, we're going to have Art in Motion, which is an art school founded by Danny Diallo-Hines, and his group, by a different name, is a more professional group called Ayatuned, performed a few years ago at Dance mm-hmm. in the Park, but they're West African dance, I think also Caribbean, but so his students from this school that he runs called Art in Motion are going to perform, and it's going to be live drumming, mm-hmm. and it's sounds like it's, of course, going to be very exciting and energetic.
You always have a big finish, so that sounds like that'll probably fill that bill.
Whenever we have West African, we're like, oh, okay, yeah, they're the finale. So, yeah.
A lot of exciting things. I think you planned a good schedule. Yeah, it certainly sounds like you did. It's going to be great. It's going to be this Saturday, September the 8th, at Roanoke Park, the official adult part of the evening starts at 7. The pre-show entertainment starts at 6.
Yeah, we really encourage people to come early to get a good seat. And I mean, even if you come late, you can sit up on top of the hill and still see, but you know, just so that you can stake out your space, and there's going to be lots of things going on anyway. So
it's the 20th. It's a 20th annual, so it looks like you've survived all this time. So it's bigger and better from here on.
Dance in the Park is kind of legendary at this point. People look forward to coming every year, or they bring their friends, new people every year, and it's great for children as well. Just want to stress that. Kids can, you can kind of feel free, you know, they can jump up and down, they can run around. It's a free performance, so it doesn't cost anything to bring your whole family. We really encourage that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the show is always family friendly, and it's always nice to see the regulars coming back, and then mm-hmm. we are always excited about new people coming as well.
To show up at Roanoke Park this Saturday, you can go online at cityinmotion.org. I'm sure there's information.
Yes.
There. You go on facebook.com/danceinthepark.
Yes.
We'll get you more information as well.
And a Facebook event.
Yeah.
So you can get on those to kind of get updates. If, for example, if we do cancel due to rain, which we are not going to do.
No. That's not allowed.
We wouldn't be doing that until right before the show, but so you can kind of follow the updates through that. But,
It'll be exciting. It'll be the 20th annual Dance in the Park, Saturday, September the 8th. Pre-show activities start getting underway at 6 o'clock p.m., the more adult part of the show at 7 p.m. in Roanoke Park, 3600 Roanoke Road. It's the north corner of the park where Carnes and Roanoke Roads intersect. Lots of great entertainment. You can sign up for classes there. Anything, if you've considered taking a class before, maybe this will inspire you mm-hmm. to take one from City in Motion.
Yes, we'll have very friendly board members there to chat with you. We'll have schedules. You'll be able to get lots of information.
Yeah, cityinmotion.org. Ask all the questions you want. They'll be ready and able to answer for you. 20th annual Dance in the Park this Saturday, September 8th, starting at, well, actually, pre-show activities at 6 o'clock p.m., the main part of the show at 7. If you need to MapQuest Roanoke Park, 64111 is where you would MapQuest to find it. Just the location and the zip code for the area, that ought to get you there. It's going to be great.
Yes.
The 20th annual. Dance in the Park. I want to thank Andrea Skowronek, one of the artistic co-directors of City in Motion, for being here once again. She's been here so many times.
You're welcome. Yeah, I love to be on your show. Thank you, Michael.
And Anne Shaughnessy, the production director and stage manager. And I don't know if you're interested in being on Dance in the Park in future years. You might want to ask her what the requirements are and all of that. We don't have time to go into it, but... Talk to her after the show.
Yeah, send a message on the Facebook page.
Oh, well, that would be good, too. Dance in the Park. Thanks so much, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll look forward to seeing you all on Saturday. The Jazz Insider, Sam Wiseman, is up next. He's got some great jazz for you to play this afternoon. We'll have jazz from 1 to 3. We'll have the blues then from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until we next meet at that cross in the road, I'm Michael Hogue. We'll see you next time.